Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Welcome to another episode of Atlanta Technology Leaders. I'm your producer, Kevin Finn, and today we have a special episode, again, always brought to us by our friends over at Bandicoders. We couldn't do this show without them. But we have a special guest host today. We have Jay Farrow. He's come on the show so many times that we had to give him his own show host. So, welcome, Jay.
You know you're scraping the bottom of the barrel if you're making me a guest host. But no, it's an honor to be here. Thank you for having me at Atlanta Tech Leaders. It's always great to see you.
Definitely. It's great. Well, you brought a great guest with you today also, didn't you?
I did. You know, I figure people were tired of hearing from me and what's going on, and I brought somebody that's doing some pretty cool things at his organization, and we'd like to talk a little bit about that. But Alan Stukalski from Randstad.
Welcome back to the Business Radio X, Mike.
Yeah, he's no stranger. He's no stranger.
Thank you. It's second time here. I've already overcome my rookie experience. So, pleasure to be here.
You know, Alan and I are both members of the GCLA, the Georgia CIO Leadership Association, and we're both active tweeters. So feel free to follow Business Radio X, Georgia CIO. I think it's at Stukalski, at Jay Farrow. We'll be live tweeting the whole time. So please join us on social media as well. Alan, great to have you here, man.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So I would imagine with an organization, let's talk, first of all, let's get into your background just a little bit. How long you've been at Randstad. I think people obviously know the name and the brand, but tell us a little bit about what, you know, your organization, the size, scale, et cetera, and then let's dive into to what you're seeing in the market.
Okay. So Randstad is the second largest staffing organization in the world, and we staff in all facets of different staffing profiles, from technology to healthcare to industrial placements. And we focus in each of the verticals, try to really put people to work. And that's our mission as a company, is to put people to work and make them successful. And there's no better feeling for me than to know that something I've done has put more people to work. On a weekly basis, we pay about 100,000 people that we put to work every day. And it's just it's a great feeling. That's just in the U.S. Obviously, we're a global company in 40 countries, so it reaches way well beyond the U.S. But my purview right now is just in the U.S.
Very cool. Yeah, how long have you been there?
Been CIO for 5 years, and prior to that, I was employee of VP of applications for about 5 years as well. And then there was a short stint where I was CIO at Church's Chicken for a little while.
Fantastic.
I went from the staffing business to the fried chicken business and then came back. So got my share of the restaurant.
You had
world.
Enough of that, did you?
It is quite a different experience.
I would imagine it is. Now, in your business, I mean, you pay over 100,000 people domestically, which is a staggering number. I would imagine that you guys, in some ways, are a canary in the coal mine for the economy. Mm-hmm. I mean, where you are an early indicator or a leading indicator for how the economy is doing. What are you seeing in the marketplace right now with IT talent or just talent in general?
Yeah, so at a high level, definitely we're seeing what we call a gradual recovery. It's not as fast as we would like, but we are seeing a recovery and continuing to see improvements from month to month and year over year as a general rule. And my focus really primarily is around IT. And in the IT market, as well, we're seeing a really hot market right now. IT is definitely a candidate market. We are always looking for new ways to recruit the best people, get them to a client, and make sure that we fill the jobs as quickly as possible, especially here in Atlanta. In Atlanta, I think the unemployment rate for IT is less than 2%.
Wow.
So that's you know, probably one of the all-time lows. And it makes it very difficult to find good people, and we have to really adapt our strategies as to how we really recruit, how we bring people on, and find them the job that really fits them.
You know, I've seen so many different studies about what attracts people to different companies. I would imagine that you have a pretty good handle on what you're seeing that draws millennials versus the more established people. And tell me if this is right, because keep me honest here. I've read a number of studies that talk about how pay in and of itself, you know, just your paycheck, is not even really in the top four or five with millennials in terms of attracting them to your organization. Is that what you're seeing too?
We are seeing that as well. And if you do a little marketing here for our Workforce 360 is our big research study that we do on an everyday basis. We're adding new content out there. And Workforce 360 is kind of the one-stop shop for you to go and find out information as to what the hiring trends are, what people are using to engage their employees, keep their employees, and make sure they have the best staff. And within that, really what we're seeing is just like you said. So you're exactly dead on. The salary as the new generations are coming into the workforce are lowering in the level of importance. Still important, obviously. Everybody wants to get paid and get paid well, right? But it's definitely lowering, and other, I would say, more soft benefits are coming up the ladder in terms of flexibility, in terms of being able to have a social life as well. You know, work-life balance has become much more a priority than has getting a big paycheck.
How do we get one of those work-life
balance? Yeah, I'm still working on it. Yeah, so
if you find one, let me know, because that would be terrific. You know, working in the nonprofit space, we're seeing that. I'm very thankful, number one, that millennials are less, again, to your point, they are concerned about money and everybody wants to get paid, but it's not number one with a bullet, because obviously in the nonprofit space, we're at a war for talent with some of the organizations here, like yours, of course, and many others, where we want to attract people. And what we have is not necessarily variable comp and all these other things that maybe companies have in their arsenal, but we do have our life-saving mission, et cetera. So I'm happy to see that millennials do care about social mm-hmm. good, and they do care about, you know, the ability to have a voice, because those are the kind of weapons that we have in the recruitment battle. So tell me about the Randstad Engagement Study.
So Randstad Engagement Study, and it goes to some of what we talked about, and is listed in our Workforce 360. If you want to find it, it's Randstad.com, Workforce 360. Shameless plug there. what we're seeing really around engagement is, to some of the things we've talked about, is it really requires a different way to keep your employees happy, to keep them engaged in the workforce. But you have to have a different tactic for each of the generations. Mm-hmm. So to keep the, you know, new generations going into the workforce engaged versus somebody that's been working for 25 years. And you really have to adjust. And that's a big challenge with many companies today. There's mixed messages that you have to give. And sometimes, you know, what I've found personally is you have oftentimes more of a more experienced management team that has a trouble relating down to a new millennials. And how they do that is critical, because that you want to keep those engaged. And that's really where the new ideas and new concepts and change management is coming from. So we've got to make sure that we are embracing that. We're not holding it back mm-hmm. and continuing to engage those the millennials that are coming into the workplace.
I mean, they're the future of the workforce, right? I mean, they're entering. They're certainly the future of the American Cancer Society. And there are some of our most passionate and hardworking folks, both at the staff level, non-IT, and of course within IT. So attracting them and keeping them, making them feel valued is key. You and I are both members of the GCLA, the Georgia CIO Leadership Association. You know, in shameless plug time again, because we do talk about the GCLA on the show a good bit, but it's so important to the CIO network and the CIO fabric of Atlanta. And we're really blessed to have an organization that ties us all together. What value have you gotten out of it?
You know, for me, it's been primarily around networking and hearing ideas, best practices, what other peers of mine are going through, and how they're actually how they're overcoming challenges. Mm-hmm. And that's really been easy for me. I've reached out to Jay, and I'll reach out to other CIOs that are in the group to really get best practices, and they'll put me in touch with other people within the organization that have done projects. I just was mentioning that mm-hmm. we're undergoing a major cloud initiative to move all of our Exchange environment over to Google, mm-hmm. and we're at the ending steps of that migration.
You just finished, didn't you?
We just finished migrating 9,000 individuals to Google from Exchange.
And you survived.
And I survived, and it was Friday, and now I'm Now doing the what's next discussion, right? And really getting the fruits of that labor with Google, that's so powerful. But you know what I've found really with GCLA, it's the collaboration, the networking, the understanding what else is being done within our industry, and really being able to have a safe place, let's call it, where you don't have as much business cards coming at you and vendors. It's very very good environment, and you feel good going to those meetings.
I agree. We've talked about that before, that safe, collaborative space, and there's no real pride of ownership. There's a lot of people exchanging great ideas, and obviously, we don't get into proprietary information, mm-hmm. but at the same time, we can talk about how we're problem solving, and if you've stepped on a landmine, or more likely, I've stepped on a landmine.
Never.
daily. I mean, let me be clear that you can learn from that. Speaking of learning, right? I mean, because right now, every time you and I turn around, we get an email or a phone call about what people like to refer to as SMAC, S-M-A-C, right? Social, mobile, analytics, and cloud. Those are the four buzzwords du jour, the third platform, or whatever anybody else wants to call it. But it's one of those, right? Mm-hmm. It's the cloud conference, the mobility conference, four big technology forces mm-hmm. that are out there. And you're doing some pretty cool things on the mobile side. Yeah. How are you? Tell us about that and how you're using that technology to differentiate Randstad.
Yeah, so I'm very proud of Randstad is a conglomerate in the U.S. of many companies that have come together and have built one company under Randstad. And as I mentioned before, we have technology, industrial, clerical, healthcare, all these different divisions. And up until end of last year, we were competing in the social marketplace. We were competing in the web marketplace against each other, not just against our competitors. Oh, we're chasing rankings on Google and finding that Randstad Healthcare and Randstad IT were, the top two, but still they're fighting against each other.
Good. That's good news and bad news, right?
Good news and bad news. And top two might be a stretch, but still, we were consistently competing. So we said, let's bring everything together. We rebranded several companies that we had back to Randstad and said, we need a single footprint. We need really targeted platform across every channel. So social, web, paper media, all different channels, and went to it with a Randstad message with some targeted areas where we would focus around. If we're looking for a specific job, we would target certain markets around, IT. Obviously, Dice is very popular, and Ladders is very, very common way to go to find a good candidate. So we went after that. We would do those targeted campaigns and bring everybody back into bring everybody back into a targeted page on the website that showed information that they wanted to see. And we would track them. We would track and say, all right, well, they clicked on this one that's around a survey around engagement. And then they went into, how do I find a best job? And we said, all right, so this person's looking for a job versus somebody that possibly will be looking for a great talent around SMAC.
That's
a new one for me.
There you go. That's not even, I can't even copyright that. So that's, I don't know where I got it, but man, it's out there somewhere. All right. But to make decisions like that and to segment your market and understand what people are doing, you need data, right?
Mm-hmm.
And lots. So this brings us to one of the other letters in SMAC, right? Analytics, or because it couldn't spell anything, business intelligence, but so how are you using BI to enable that decision making?
Yeah. So good question there, Jay. We use it in a couple of areas. I'll start with more around the sales area. And there's always opportunity to find better leads and to really point our salespeople into what they want to sell, who they want to sell to. And we've partnered with a few companies out there that provide really good intelligence around who's looking for a job, who's wanting to hire the best staff, and in what different positions. So we've gone out there, brought in many of those pieces of data, brought them into our big data for, let's call it, our warehouse, and said, all right, what sort of algorithms do we need to build? How do we find for this recruiter or this salesperson sitting at our desk in Alpharetta, Georgia, who should they be calling on? And giving them as much intelligence as possible. And that's really been our first big entry into big data and mm-hmm. been extremely successful. And obviously then going from there. So how do we do more? How do we enhance that process? How do we get them quicker from cold calling and sending emails to you and I with SMAC intelligence? And how do we get them to really the right person at a company?
Right. So we talked about big data, and of course we hear that term every single day, and it, like anything in IT, it tends to mean different things to different CIOs and different organizations. Now that you're beginning to dive into that and you're getting your organization this better analytical capability, are you seeing an even greater hunger for that? Okay. I mean, because I think effective CIOs like yourself are very good CIOs. We're our own worst enemies. We start to be successful, and all of a sudden, you know, all the governors are off. It's like, well, wait a minute, IT's delivering.
Yeah.
Oh, good. I've had these 50 things in queue that I've never brought up before, but now that you guys are delivering, here you go. Are you seeing that with big data? Well, I didn't know you could do that. Well, what about this? You know, a big list of 25 things.
Right. So I'll start by, I'm sure this is a problem every company's having. I would hope this is a problem every company's having with too much to do and not enough time or resources.
Yes.
But my boss, Linda Gallipo, she's a CEO for North America for Randstad. Wonderful woman. She's always innovating, always pushing the needle and trying to do something innovative in the marketplace. And we started with the leads, and the creative juices started flowing. And from that, we said, oh, we've got 10 other options we can do with this. You know, we can use it here and we can use it there. And the next thing you know, you've got a plate full of different projects that we're working on that's really making the best use of data to bring the intelligence to the end user at the lowest level. And that's the challenge. And for me, you know, where I struggle is the voluminous nature of this information is hard to bring down to a user or end user, end salesperson, and you want to give them just in time, really pinpointed information that they can use and not have to really lessen their work. Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a terrific point. And, you know, user adoption obviously is the secret sauce, right? I mean, we sometimes think as CIOs, it's field of dreams. If I build it, they will come. And obviously that is not always the case. The last thing you want is to go, ta-da, here it is. And it gathers cobwebs and nobody clicks on it. What maybe did you do to get people excited about it from the folks that are really doing the real work outside of IT that are using it day to day? How'd you get them excited about it?
So it's an exciting concept. It's just from a start. So anybody that's ever done sales has a database. They know they try to add to that database every day and come up with new leads. So we sold it by telling them, hey, this is your new leads. It's going to make it easier for you. You're not going to be calling off of Yellow Pages or different websites that provide this type of information. You've now got some solid information in front of you. And what we did from a implementation perspective, like many IT projects, we started small, started with pilots, really proved it out, made sure it works in a small targeted audience, and then started growing it from there. And the targeted audience, very focused, very much kind of here's how you have to do it, use it every day. And then we adapted as we grew. We have, within the U.S., we have 5,000 employees and then many temps, obviously. And those 5,000 employees are charged with selling every day, day in and day out. So to go from a pilot of 50 to 5,000 was a large challenge, and we're actually going through that process now. Don't have the magic secret in front of me, but it is one of those things that you have to manage and measure every day. You have to do it on a daily basis and be able to adapt quickly. Mm-hmm. And management has to have full participation and involvement.
You touched on everybody being a salesperson in the organization, which I think is a terrific point, because eventually you want everyone to be an advocate for what you're doing. You want everybody to have the religion and be selling the Randstad brand. Same thing we do at ACS, where even though technically my job description isn't fundraiser, I'm still responsible and I still represent the ACS brand, and so I'm still, quote, selling or fundraising because it's the lifeblood of what we do. Now, you know, another trend in the industry that we hear a lot about as CIOs is the CIO-CMO relationship. And how is your relationship with marketing?
It's actually very good, Jay. Kristen Kelly is our CMO. And I'll do one more shameless plug here. Apologize, no. But GCLA is having a CMO function in June 12th, and Kristen Kelly, as well as another CMO, will be on a panel where we'll be able to ask them questions. And I invite all CIOs to attend and grill my CMO with any type of questions that they'd like to see. And the other CMO is Kevin Smith from Rollins. Will be there as well. So please attend that GCLA function and really hear about at least the Randstad and the Rollins CMO-CIO relationship and what makes us successful. So back to your question, Jay, we do have a very good relationship.
Good.
It's a partnership, and we are always pushing each other. We focus on how do we make each other better? She obviously is always pushing sales as well. So mm-hmm. she's worked very closely with me in the sales initiative that I just mentioned. But we're always looking for what's next. And you have to have that what's next mentality in today's world, or you'll be left behind. And we've sometimes struggled because, as I mentioned earlier, we had many websites competing. We had to go to one. It's kind of an obvious, you know, decision when you look at it. But we were in that internally focused world so much that we didn't think that that was the answer until kind of set the line. And Kristen, you know, I attribute her for actually helping get past that that threshold and getting us to one and really seeing the power of one.
That's a blessing to have that. You know, mm-hmm. one of the things that we did, and you may have done this too, because it sounds like you have a terrific partnership. Our CMO does have responsibility for sales or revenue income, we call it, in the nonprofit space, as well as just, you know, more the standard marketing type function. But we do have shared goals. So we know that I know I can't be successful without her, and she can't be successful without me. Now, that doesn't mean everything is butterflies, unicorns, and, you know, rainbows every single day, or that we're going to agree on everything. But what we can agree on is that we both have the organization's best interest in mind. We're both type A personalities. We're both drivers. And we both have no real massive pride of ownership. We just want to get it done. And that has helped a good bit. I would imagine you see a similar dynamic or...
Yeah, and that the ownership piece, I think, is very important on any right. management team, right, mm-hmm. is everybody needs to be focused on a single goal, and the more they're focused on that single goal, the better the partnership will be. And within our management team here at Randstad US, we really focus on that, and I think there's two pieces. There's the common goals, overlapping goals that we all have, and then we pride ourselves in trying to make sure every employee in the organization understands why we make decisions. If they understand why we've made a certain decision that's rolling out within the company and not just that a change is impacting them, the why really gets them some intelligence, gets them teaches at least the manager level really how to answer the question. If somebody's having a discussion as to, you know, I don't like this new concept or this new change that's rolled out, at least they'll know why we decided to go that route. And I think that's very important.
That's right. You're not necessarily looking for 100% buy-in, but you're looking for at least education so that they can kind of go, yeah, you know, I may not necessarily agree, but I get it. You know, I understand the framework and the decision. How have you maybe taken some of the technology or the best practices you're seeing paired with integrated marketing in the recruiting space? What opportunities or best practices or lessons learned do you have for us?
So, recruiting is actually probably my biggest challenge, and I say that because there's everyone that's listening to this radio show in IT has had recruiters call them for jobs or had salespeople call them to try and help them staff, and we struggle every day with all the different avenues that are out there to recruit the best candidate and see where they are and focus really on the passive candidate, not on the ones that are out there trolling the job boards all day long, and that's difficult. Right, mm-hmm. That's a very big challenge. So what we've done, and it's similar to our sales and marketing campaigns, is we try to target. We try to work with individuals, especially that are looking for some of those harder to place positions, what we call in the business kind of the purple squirrels. you know, the trilingual customer service Java developer.
Those are a dime a dozen, man. Come on. Those are flowing right out of the school.
Exactly. So what we do is we do targeted campaigns, and we focus the messaging onto certain sites where we think that there are going to be those types of candidates. We push out messaging through different platforms, whether it be LinkedIn, Dice, Monster, any of the large job boards. And when we get some interest, then we try and keep touch with them through crawlers, through tracking, and I'm sure everyone here has seen some of the tracking mechanisms out on the internet now to try and make sure that we continue to give people relevant content that they're interested in and bring them back to our info. Once they come back to our, you know, Workforce 360 or to our job board, mm-hmm. we say, hey, let's target more with them, bring that back into our branch that's really looking for that type of skill set and say, here's a candidate that has some interest, and then they start making phone calls. So it's kind of intelligent phone calls at a targeted place.
Very, very. It leads me into my next question, which is a perfect segue: lead management and lead scoring. You know, you're out there looking at all the talent. You know, you got a lot of different leads out there, and you know, you're working with different organizations. I assume you guys have some fairly sophisticated models and the way that you score some of this stuff. Tell us a little bit about that and how you guys have become such a leader in that space.
So, and the algorithms, we call them algorithms, and, mm-hmm. and we've built several around lead management, around lead results. Mm-hmm. And where we focus our time is what's the most likely customer to buy from us. And we start from the obvious one, somebody that's bought from us before. But then we go kind of up the value chain of they've bought from us before, they might buy from us, you know, again, they buy from our competitors, or they've got a job posting out there, so they're looking for somebody in a certain skill set. And we take that information and that knowledge we have on potential customers, we bring it all back in. We've written some algorithms ourselves that help us find the right people at those clients, so we're not calling 100 people to find out who the payroll manager is or who the, you know, web development manager is that we need to talk to. And then we say, all right, now we know who the person is. We push that into the right salesperson and get them to focus on calling them versus randomly choosing out of LinkedIn or out of other scenarios that we have.
Very cool. Very, very cool. You mentioned earlier that you guys just finished a Google Apps implementation. Now, for my own edification, I'm just curious. We finished an Office 365 migration last year of roughly very, you know, comparable size and everything. What were your lessons learned? How did it go? How has adoption been? I mean, I think CIOs are out there. They're dealing with legacy email systems. I know I did. You had a legacy email system. I don't think any CIO ever makes his or her stripes by managing email really, really good, unless it doesn't work, and then they run you out of there on Rails, right? But what was some of the decision-making going into it, and then how was it? Would you consider it successful 3 days later or 5 days later, whatever it is, mm-hmm. I guess? No, six. Six-day celebration. So tell us a little bit about it.
So for us, the decision criteria was primarily, again, going back to we had many companies with multiple Exchange environments, and anybody that's managed within one organization, you know, 7 or 8 Exchange environments, it's complicated keeping them in sync. Mm-hmm. Some of them were old versions of Exchange, which had some reliability issues. So those were some of the reasons to go to a new platform. We obviously looked at Exchange and looked at other competitors or other options. But what really sold us on Google was the collaboration. It's not just email, contacts, calendar. It's everything else that you get with it. And that's where we're starting to see kind of the fruits of our labor now. When we started that first week, 2 weeks that we're seeing with the final go live, even right now, 6 days in, is the challenge of change and mm-hmm. change management. That's huge, and you can never underestimate that. And we had a huge campaign that we did for that because this was our largest go-live was of 2,200 employees.
Oh, wow.
But what we've seen and kind of the evolution of it is week one, week two, it's change management. It's how do I do everything that I did before in my legacy platform? But then when you get into week 3, 4, 5, you start seeing the value. And it's hard to say that to somebody that's on day 6 and is frustrated because they can't find their sent items or what have you. But what I've been seeing as I go into different locations and go into talk to different departments is I spend an hour with them and I find 3 or 4 efficiencies that they didn't have before that we could use Google for. And that's the power. And it's not always email or calendar. It's the Google Apps. It's Google Docs. It's Google Sites. It's Google Plus. It's Hangouts, which is something we've started using, right? Hangouts for even video interviewing. Those things are really where I think the power is. And the challenge for me now is we've rolled out the base platform. Now how do you get the adoption? You know, so it's that 20% of the product that you use you want to take to 100%. That's challenging. And we've got some strategies that we've put together around, you know, communication, training, campaigns, and kind of best use cases and things of that nature that we're going to be rolling out to the larger audience. And I think it's going to just kind of take over in the organization. So we're very happy with it. We're, I would say, a good customer, and I would say a happy customer with Google. And just the innovation is just tremendous. So
they're putting out new features all the time. I mean, we're seeing the same thing with 365, and neither is a shameless plug, but I guess they kind of are. But you know, for us, it's teaching folks how to work differently, because I think you're right. In the first couple of weeks, they're trying to do a one-to-one from, well, I used to do this in Lotus Notes or Exchange. Now I want to do exactly that same thing in the new system. And then they start seeing other menu options. They start seeing other integration points. It's like, oh, well, I never could do that before. That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And then how do you operationalize that and get everybody using it? And here we are 6 months later with, you know, at ACS, and we have people doing ad hoc whiteboarding. You know, they could just, I see Alan in my list in Microsoft Link. I right click and I can share my desktop and do all these things, much like Hangouts and all that stuff. So very, very, very similar. And now they don't know how they lived without it.
Right.
Right. And it's like, well, gosh, we could never could do this before. But there's a couple of painstaking weeks or months in there when you're doing it and you're working without a net, you're going, oh, Lord, I hope this was the right thing for the organization. Yes. And people actually use it and they don't come to my door with pitchforks and torches.
Yes.
So as a CIO of a very large company, you've obviously had a tremendous amount of success and you're doing some pretty cool things with the latest technologies. What's keeping you up at night? What are your biggest challenges these days? I mean, we always think about uptime. Oh, God, what if the website goes down? You know, all those. I mean, I think every CIO, you know, thinks about that stuff. But what else is keeping you up at night?
So if you ask my wife, sleeping is not usually a problem for me. So,
you go down like you're shot, huh?
I wake up early, but I go down when I'm late. But no, seriously, I think what's really more, I guess, stressful or keeps me up at night is really around security. And you've seen what happened at Target, and there's way too many examples that are happening. That's really my biggest worry. And keeping our systems secure, keeping our firewalls and infrastructure secure from people that are trying to gain information from us, that's our biggest worry. And what really keeps me up at night is around making sure we have a secure environment. So that's...
Can I get an amen just to go ahead and parrot my good friend Ricky Steele?
Amen.
Can I get an amen?
Amen. Amen.
If it's not number one on a CIO's list or his or her list, then it certainly should be tied for number one. Mm-hmm. We've seen too many very good CIOs and other people burnt in the marketplace and organizations. And if you're not taking the security and the protection of your customers' data, treating it with the utmost care, then you're missing the boat. So I absolutely agree with you.
And then just to add to that, right? So there's security. I think the next piece really for me that's more long term, but it seems to be evolving every day, is to your point, SMAC, you know, social, mobile, analytics, all of those areas are changing by the minute. And what's the right answer? So we're constantly looking to decide, you know, where do we invest? Are we going to invest in something that's long-term that might get outdated within weeks? We worry about that tremendously. And I think we've been pretty successful in making the right decisions as to where we focus our time, our energy, especially around social, around mobile. That's where there's a big focus for us today and picking our partners wisely.
Fantastic. You know, it's the pace of change is just – it doubles every day, and you and I just are struggling to keep up, and that's why it's so important to have good teams around us. You know, you mentioned earlier June 12th is the date of the next the GCLA event, the Georgia CIO Leadership Association event, and we're going to have a couple of world-class CMOs and have a terrific discussion. You can get more information. In fact, it was Kevin Smith and Kristen Kelly. Kevin Smith, of course, the CMO for Rollins. Kristen Kelly, your CMO and business partner over there at Randstad. It's 11:30 to 1:30, June 12th, at the Ritz-Carlton in Buckhead. You can get more information at georgiacio.org, so please check that out. It's going to be an all-star lunch, and it should be time really, really well spent. And speaking of big events, we have another one, 2 days from now, the TechBridge Digital Ball, which I know you will be at. We're both CIO hosts. And I have the pleasure and the honor of being the board chair for TechBridge as well, you know, since I don't have enough to do in my life. But it's I would absolutely make time at all times because it's such a powerful organization. Why do you well, first of all, the ball is great. Tell me your thoughts on the event itself, but why do you stay involved with TechBridge and what they do?
So the ball is great. TechBridge, you know, just the concept and what they do for the nonprofit industry here in Atlanta and beyond is just amazing. Mm-hmm. And I've been involved in it for several years now, contributing time, contributing my knowledge, let's say, and had a really some impactful moments as to how we impact different nonprofits. And it's just tremendous that there's a group that can do that, because I've been to nonprofits that are kind of starting off the ground and they just don't know where to go from an IT perspective.
That's right.
Right. And it's just, you know, you almost feel sorry for them. And I wish I had more time to really spend with them to get them off the ground. And this group really found that hole and met the need. And I think the Atlanta community has done a magnificent job. The Digital Ball is just a perfect example of how we support that. And the IT community here is really tremendous. And we've done so many things, so many sponsorships. But TechBridge really is one that helps nonprofits become successful with an IT platform. And it's really, really just something exciting.
No, I agree. And I couldn't even add anything to that. It was really, really well said. And it's time well spent. It's certainly dollars well spent. When you see, what, to your point, what these nonprofits struggle with every day, just the core blocking and tackling, and these are very passionate folks who are, you know, leading with their heart and doing a ton for the community and touching thousands, if not millions, of lives. And to give them the tools that you and I sometimes take for granted, you and I, I'm sure, appreciate the tools. But we, you know, these organizations, if they get a dollar in the door, their first thought is, you know, I need to go buy IT stuff. Their thought is, how can I give this dollar to, you know, this, you know, to make more food, to, you know, generate more for the mission that we have. And TechBridge has done a phenomenal job. You're absolutely right. You know, my man, I want to thank you for being here, Alan.
Thank you.
It's been a real honor to be here. You're doing some really amazing things at Randstad. I feel like in 36 minutes that I'm leaving smarter than I came, which most people would say is not hard for you, Jay, since the bar was set so low. But no, you guys are doing some really amazing things. I appreciate you taking the time. I want to thank my man over, you know, my man with the Band of Coders and their organization for their unwavering support of this broadcast. Thank you very much. You guys are terrific. And as always, the producer with the most.
Thanks, Jay.
You got it, buddy. Who always treats me like royalty when I come in here. And whenever I feel bad about myself at my job or at home, I come in here and they treat me like royalty. And so thank you very much for having us.
All right. Well, we'll be back next week with another episode of Band of Coders.
Atlanta Technology Leaders is brought to you by Band of Coders. Band of Coders is a company of talented software developers who energize clients' projects and their development teams.